Lions beat the brakes off of the Seahawks on Monday Night Football 42-29 and improved their record to 3-1 with a perfect passing game from Jared Goff. Unfortunately, didn't get the perfect passer rating, but went 18 for 18. Jaguars dropped to 0-4 after losing to the Texans. The Chiefs are now 4-0, but lose Rashee Rice due to a knee injury, potential of ACL. And the Eagles fall to the Buccaneers 33-16 in a NFC wildcard rematch. And follow up to end the show, our Fumbrewski top three, bottom three. You're listening to the Fumbrewski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns. Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You're listening to the Fumbrewski podcast, Power 88 Dean Radio, and Secret Weapon Consulting. Oh, week four of the NFL season has come and gone. Chris Kostich, CJ Medeiros, and Adam Wright here to bring you the week four coverage going into week five. And a lot has happened during week four, a lot of screwy stuff, but we'll start with the Monday night slot, the second half of the Monday night slot, because the first half, God forbid any of you actually watch the Dolphins-Titans game, but this guy right here got that right. Not you two. Not these two jokers.
I only went 13-3 on every other pick.
Nice try, Diddy.
But Lions beating the Seahawks 42-29. And this Lions offense just could not be stopped at all. In total, 19 for 19 for Detroit, because Amon-Ra St. Brown had a passing touchdown to Jared Goff. But Goff with a 18 for 18, 292 yards, and two touchdown performance. Did not get the perfect passer rating, unfortunately. If you probably had some more yards, more touchdowns, probably would have gone the perfect passer rating. And also has the record now for most completions in a row without an incompletion. Or in a game, I should say. Most completions without an incompletion in the game. And for some reason, he won't get the completion percentage record because he didn't exceed 20 pass attempts, which makes sense. But in all generality, Lions looked absolutely unstoppable in this game. Seahawks defense just couldn't do anything. And we were talking about prior to the show, I think we were hearing that Seahawks were dealing with some injuries on the defensive end. But regardless, injury or not, this was a complete offensive, whatever you want to call it, offensive dominance from the Lions. Jameson Williams showing out, two catches, 80 yards and a touchdown. Not a lot of catches, did get a ton of targets, but still a big game. And it wasn't even like the Seahawks played a bad game either. I mean, Geno Smith, 38 for 56, 395 yards. Kenneth Walker, unfortunately, only got 12 carries. 16 touches total. DK Metcalf had a big game. Fellas, I mean, obviously Seahawks losing, but didn't go down without a fight. But the Lions are looking insane right now. And Adam, we know that you have them as your Super Bowl favorite, so you're probably foaming at the mouth right now over this.
I mean, I was gushing over them off camera before we started the show, but this is a clear-cut team that looks like a Super Bowl contender, and I think they deserve all of the hype that they have been getting. It's a well-oiled machine. I mean, their coaching is very good. Ben Johnson's a very good offensive coordinator. Dan Campbell can get a little aggressive at times, but if he can just restrain a little bit, he'll be fine. But as far as personnel goes, things are going about as well as they could possibly go. They have one of the better rushing duos in the league with Montgomery and Gibbs. They also have Amon-Ra St. Brown doing the things that he usually does. Sam Laporta is looking like one of the better young tight ends in the league now. And on top of that, a pleasant surprise in Jameson Williams, finally looking like he can be what he was potentially supposed to be when he came out of the draft back a couple of years ago. which is huge, because if it ends up turning into a wide receiver 1A, 1B duo between him and St. Brown, then look out. I mean, it was not a fluke that Jared Goff was 18 for 18 on his passes. He has plenty of players to throw to. He has a good offensive line that keeps him on his feet and a good coaching scheme. The only thing I'm worried about a little bit is defense, and they have the personnel. They just have some new players on that team. It may take some time for them to gel. But overall, I think this team deserves to be favored to win the Super Bowl right now. I really do.
For Detroit, this wasn't just a win, but a convincing win. I mean, the Seahawks were undefeated coming into this game, and the Lions beat the brakes off of 42-29. And look, I know that Seattle had a lot of injuries. For example, like their entire pass rushing unit, Eboye Mafe, Uchenna Nwosu, Leonard Williams, and rookie Byron Murphy II were out. You know, I get that. But still, you have a solid group of defensive backs. You know, you got to have that next man up mentality. And it's not even that Seattle played terribly. I mean, Geno completed 38 of 56 pass attempts. He had 395 yards. But hey, Jared Goff, like I said, didn't even miss a throw, 292 yards, two touchdowns. Heck, Amon-Ra threw a touchdown. Jahmyr Gibbs had two touchdowns. David Montgomery had 40 yards on the ground. And what really should scare defenses about this Lions offense is that there is no one guy who you need to shut down, right? A lot of these teams have this one X factor, be it a tight end or receiver, and the game plan is we shut them down, they win. But who do you shut down? Jameson Williams, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tim Patrick, Sam Laporta, or do you try to stifle Jahmyr Gibbs or Dave Montgomery out of the backfield? The Lions have so many ways they could hurt you. And defensively, it's a little concerning, but they're starting to gel more. And a lot of these guys, I would outright say, are underrated because everybody knows names like Terrion Arnold, you know, rookie standout from Alabama, early standout draft pick from Alabama. And, you know, who could forget
Aiden Hutchinson.
I was getting there. But other than Hutchinson, you got DJ Reader, you have Levi Onwuzurike, Brandon Joseph, Kirby Joseph, Alex Anzalone, Jack Campbell. Like, you have so many of these guys who, like I said, they're not flashy. They're not your highlight reel guys. But, oh, my God, they're going to get the job done and then some. And not to mention they have a pretty reliable kicker as well in Jake Bates, who's been pretty solid. And overall, just I think Detroit's got to hold their heads high. They won the day. That's all well and good. But for Seattle, you're still 3-1, not the end of the world. Get healthy, and we'll probably see you in the playoffs.
Yeah, I honestly think this is a pretty good little preview of what we could be seeing in the playoffs. I could see the Lions and the Seahawks facing off in the divisional round or the wild card, depending on how everything shapes up. And I think that this would end up being a much better game, or a one-score game. And honestly, this was on the verge of being a one-score game, and the Seahawks were on the goal line right at the end to make it a one-score game, but just weren't able to. That last play that they had on their last drive, just a weird one where Geno Smith wasn't really ready for the snap, but there was 1 second on the play clock, so they kind of had to get the play off, and play went on. They had a chance, just couldn't get it. And on top of that, too, this was a game where Aiden Hutchinson couldn't even, only 3 quarterback hits to his name, and that was the only stat category he got himself in this game. Seahawks were able to shut him down, but the rest of the defense was pretty much all over him. I mean, granted, Seahawks still put up 29 points, but, I mean, that's football sometimes. You also can't win when you give up 42 points. 90%.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that was basically it. You can go.
Yeah, the defense is the only concern for me right now, but it's so early in the year, and they have so much good personnel, and their defense was better last year than it is this year at this point, and they have better personnel right now. So that leads me to believe that with all the new faces that they have on this defense, between Terrion Arnold, Carlton Davis, DJ Reader, I think they just need a little bit of time, and then eventually they'll find their identity on defense. And also, one of their players individually is already showing out. Aiden Hutchinson, with 6.5 sacks on the year so far, he is making a case for Defensive Player of the Year right now. Will he win it? I don't know. But the fact that he's making a case is good for the team, especially on defense, where they are right now struggling the most. So I think this team overall, it's a well-oiled machine. They have good coaching. They have good personnel. And they just went to the conference championship last year and could be playing in the Super Bowl if they weren't too aggressive with Dan Campbell. So this is their conference to lose, in my opinion.
Yeah. TJ, any last thoughts on this game?
I think obviously the Lions control their own destiny. And the only thing that I think could give them any kind of grief is their division, because the Bears, I think they're a few years out from contending. I don't know what the hell is going on with the Packers. They're weird. But the Vikings being undefeated with Sam Darnold, is it a fluke? Could be, maybe. But if it's not, then that's going to be a very, very big problem. And I honestly think the Lions division is the only thing that could hinder them at all. So do with that what you will.
Yeah. Now that as you mentioned, Sam Darnold and the Vikings are 4-0 right now. So surprisingly enough, that's kind of where we're at right now in the NFC North. Packers just got Jordan Love back, so they're going to be back to being contenders. Bears just picked up a win this past week against the Rams. So NFC North starting to get a little competitive again. But hey, only week four. So, and bye weeks are starting to come around. So we'll see how teams do after those bye weeks. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll move on to the Jaguars dropping to 0-4. What the hell's going on in Jacksonville? You're listening to the Fumble Risky podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You're listening to the Fumble Risky podcast, Power 18 Radio, and Secret Weapon Consulting. And we move on to our next topic. Jaguars losing to the Texans 24-20 and now dropping to 0-4. Now currently the only winless team in the NFL. Oh, geez. This is troubling. It's troubling, you know. Get a divisional opponent, and the Texans, they're coming off a terrible loss against the Vikings the week prior. And so many things are going wrong in Jacksonville. And the press conference afterwards was terrible with Doug Peterson. Basically in the press conference saying, you know, Press Taylor's calling all the plays, and I thought he called a good game. Yada yada. So one could say, oh well, Doug Peterson is throwing his OC under the bus, kinda. But if you didn't get that, which I didn't get that out of that comment, I thought he was more sticking up for his guy. If you didn't get that, you would have gotten him throwing his players under the bus, saying, you know, it comes to a point where the players then have to execute the game plan. Well, it's hard to execute the game plan when Tank Bigsby only gets 7 carries. Travis Etienne only gets 11 carries, 12 touches in total. Tank Bigsby didn't get a carry in the single time in the fourth quarter. And you can imagine the social media presence after the press conference was pretty sour towards Doug Peterson. And we've mentioned this multiple times in prior episodes, last few weeks. You know, it's, you could say it's coaching, you could say this and that, but, and now the conversation kind of has to start of, well, maybe this is now a Trevor Lawrence problem, which I'm starting to slowly more and more kind of go to that this is starting to be like, obviously in the past, Trevor Lawrence is a victim, you know, dealing with Urban Meyer and all the other bullshit that was going on. But now we're at a point that, yeah, we kind of have to start putting some blame on Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth there. Like, we're at a point where this goes, we've put a lot of blame on Press Taylor in this offensive scheme. But we're getting to a point when you start 0-4 and you miss the playoffs last year after starting the season 8-3. And even when you were 8-3, that earlier in 2023, you didn't really look like anything special. Something was not passing the eye test. And we were right, because they ended up missing the playoffs in one of the worst second half of the season collapses in recent memory, as far as a team that has expectations and just didn't deliver. And looking at this team this year, it's even worse, because you lost Calvin Ridley, yes, but then you replaced him and somehow got a player who was better. Brian Thomas Jr. has actually turned out to be the wide receiver one they've been looking for a couple of years. They still have Christian Kirk, who's playing still good ball. You still have Evan Engram, who's been in and out of the lineup with injuries, but you still have him in the last two calendar years. You've had him. You have Travis Etienne. Tank Bigsby's a good player himself. Something is seriously off about this team. Don't blame it on the offensive line, too, because I'm not going to say that they have a very good offensive line, but it's a stable one. It's a good enough one to keep Trevor Lawrence on his feet. So what's the real issue here? First rule of leadership is everything is your fault. If you look at the quarterback, you have to put a little bit of blame on him at this point.
The Jaguars have a problem, and it's not a small problem. I would say it's a $275 million problem. That contract is aging poorly for Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars by extension. And look, if you've ever listened to this podcast before, chances are you've heard us say we're not very big fans of their offensive coordinator, Press Taylor. His play calling's abysmal, and I don't know how he has struggled with this roster. And I also think Doug Peterson's a fraudulent. He's a fraudulent head coach who blindly stumbled his way into one ring in Philly and then has proceeded to coast since. But Lawrence does have a part to play in this, because when you look at the Jags game, he's very pedestrian, 18 of 33, which I believe is a 54% completion percentage. Didn't even break 200 yards, 169 passing yards, and two touchdowns. I mean, it's not bad, but would you give that quarterback $275 million over a five-year time period? No, you probably wouldn't. And if you would, get your head examined, go to that same doctor to see. And it's so perplexing why this Jaguars team is struggling. Because you got Tank Bigsby, you got Travis Etienne, you got Christian Kirk, you got Brian Thomas, and I know Evan Engram's hurt, but you also got Gabe Davis. Like, I get all that. I do. And I guess you could say their defense is weird, because Eric Armstead is looking washed. Ronald Darby is basically just running out there for cardio alone. Joshua Hines-Allen's okay. I mean, he hasn't been that great thus far. Trayvon Walker's been a non-factor. So, just from a name value standpoint alone, their team's not terrible. I do think that they would benefit from some new coaching. However, Lawrence has got to change, because this was a winnable game. I mean, I know they're 0-4, but they only lost to the Texans by 4, 24-20. And I know C.J. Stroud played a pretty good game himself, was like 60-something percent. I want to say like 65% completion percentage, like 345 yards, two touchdowns. That's pretty good. I mean, the Texans are literally down both of their good running backs in Mixon and Pierce. They literally had to start Cam Akers, rely on specialist Dare Ogunbowale, and Patriots legend J.J. Taylor. And even if you did just, let them run the ball in their weird little effort there, you still got gashed by Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs. So for Jacksonville, I feel like I said, a head coaching change is a step in the right direction. But this was one of those tough divisional games where even though you were in Houston, that was very winnable. Houston played well, but they weren't playing their best ball. And Lawrence probably should have won that game. And at this point in time, I do believe it's a foregone conclusion, unless something changes overnight, that Doug Peterson will not be the head coach of this team at the end of the year. I do think he gets jettisoned off midseason. But at the end of the day, I just, how many more excuses can Trevor Lawrence get? Because y'all mentioned about what happened with Urban Meyer. You know, obviously he gets a mulligan there. But even when the Jags are winning, like Adam said, the eye test just isn't there. So I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, Trevor, there's not really a clear-cut answer to how to fix this. There's probably a lot of different options you can go with, and one of them being a coaching change. One of them probably slap Trevor Lawrence upside the head and tell him, get your mind out of your ass, or get your head out of your ass. And the Jags, I mean, look, they've lost three of these four losses are by one score. One of them, they're up in the game against the Dolphins, and they blew the lead. Then they lost by five to the Browns, spanked on Monday Night Football by the Bills. And then the Texans just beat them this past week. They're in these games, but it's just not fun football to watch these guys. Yeah, it's – and Trevor Lawrence this past week, as you guys mentioned, this was a winnable game. Trevor Lawrence should have brought these guys to victory, but he missed a good amount of throws that should have been made to get the win, but he didn't. That's all it really is. There's not really much else to say about the Jaguars besides that they are an absolute dumpster fire. Doug Peterson throwing his players under the bus is pretty typical. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about this team, really. What do you guys got? Anything else?
I'd like to point out the offensive line is actually turns out a much larger concern than we actually thought. They are towards the bottom of the league as far as pressure allowed, and their pass block win rate as well as their run block win rate is abysmal. They're ranked third to last, just behind the Patriots and another team that's name is escaping me. So maybe the offensive line deserves some blame here. But there's a lot of issues with this team. And again, the personnel shouldn't be an issue with the offensive line because they have some good players there. I'm just worried that there's multiple issues on this team, and for a team that we thought was going to be a contender just a year ago, for them to start 0-4, have one of the worst collapses that we have seen in recent memory for a team in the second half of a season. I mean, it doesn't get much worse than this. So they may have to blow everything up. I mean, it's getting to that territory where they're going to have to trade everyone away. They're going to have to figure out if Trevor Lawrence is actually the guy for them in a couple of years. This isn't looking good.
Yeah, this should be a very interesting rest of the season for the Jaguars. And the way that they're playing, they could go 0-16 this year. Honestly, the way that they're playing, however, they do have two games in London that you might as well just shoo them in for a win against the Bears and the Patriots, because the NFL loves sending the Jaguars to London. So you might as well just put two wins on the board for the Jaguars. But with that being said, they could very well go 2-15. We're going to move on to our next topic. Chiefs proving to 4-0, but losing Rashee Rice to a knee injury via Patrick Mahomes being a dumbass. Chiefs are now one of two 4-0 teams this year, along with the Vikings, and they're able to beat the Chargers in kind of an uglier game, 17-10. And this has kind of been a weird story with the Chiefs this year, where they just haven't really looked great, but have done enough to get wins. Kind of sloppier games that they've been playing in. Mahomes hasn't played all that great. They already lost Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt, and Samaj Perine are taking a lot of touches now. Travis Kelce did get himself a lot more looks this week, 7 catches, 89 yards. But I mean, who else is Mahomes thrown to besides Xavier Worthy? I mean, it's terrible in terms of targets, but yeah, Rashee Rice being lost, and hopefully for their case, it's not an ACL or anything around that range.
I mean, we're at a point where we're safe to assume that he's at least out for the foreseeable future. It was feared to be a torn ACL, and that reporting was done pretty quickly. They said they would confirm it through tests, and it still hasn't been. It's Tuesday. This happened on Sunday. The bigger storyline is how badly they've been hit by the injury bug this season. They restocked the shelf with wide receivers, at least just pass catchers in general. You addressed the wide receiver position with Marquise Brown, not even going to play this season. Rashee Rice, in his second year, has taken a massive leap forward. He's done for at least the foreseeable future. Isaiah Pacheco is on IR. He's out at least 8 weeks. At least 8 weeks. Travis Kelce hasn't looked like the same guy. We're hoping that it's just a blocking issue, that the offensive line has been so bad that he's had to stay on the line to help out. But if it isn't, if it turns out he's really just a shell of himself, then they're in big trouble. And I'm here. CJ's been saying this a lot. I'm going to be very vague on it so that CJ can elaborate on it more. But there's been some red flags with Xavier Worthy, particularly with the fact that he's very fast and they have to scheme his way open. And CJ, I'll let you elaborate more on that.
Thanks, Adam. But yeah, no, Adam was right. This is something that I've said off camera, and I might have said this once on the show. So if you haven't heard, I'll say it again. So we all know about their injuries, right? Mahomes literally took out his own guy in Rashee Rice. They signed Hollywood Brown, and they've never had him. You know, he's still hurt. But which would mean, to the untutored eye of the ignorant layman, they would say, oh, easy, Xavier Worthy, first-round pick. Problem solved. No, wrong. Not problem solved. Because, you know, Xavier Worthy, right? First-round pick. We all know this. And I'd like to ask you all something. What are his stats exactly? What's he really been doing as, for all intents and purposes, wide receiver 2 behind Rice? Through 4 games, he has 9 catches. So he's averaging a little over 2 catches a game for 154 yards and 2 touchdowns. And he has, they've tried to get the ball into his hands on the ground, you know, with 5 rushing attempts through 30 for 39 yards and 1 touchdown. So for Rice, you'll notice that's bad for, like I said, someone who is their wide receiver 2. And he's arguably the fastest guy in the NFL. I mean, up there with the Tyreek Hills of the world. I mean, come on. He has the 40-yard dash record, but he's not getting open. How are you that fast and not getting open? Well, I'll tell you why. And by the way, all the credit in the world to my good friend Adam Wright, who raised these red flags in the pre-draft process. He's fast, but he doesn't have agility. He's not quick. His route running savvy is... well, let's just say it leaves a lot to be desired. He doesn't have the route tree, that bag he can go in. He does not have that. And honestly, even though the Chiefs beat the Bengals, Cam Taylor-Britt just said, okay, he's good when you just send him in a straight line. But unfortunately, this is pro ball, and you are not often asked to go in a straight line. And the fact that he's not getting open, the fact he only has 9 catches, like I said, is, like I said, just nothing short of alarming. And he's only been targeted 15 times through 4 games. So do the math. That's not even 4 times he's getting targeted. And every time they, you know, they're trying to target him, these are dinks and dunks that he takes up the field. These are end arounds where they're pitching the ball to him. He has to be schemed open. If you draft someone in the first round, they have to be able to get open naturally. They cannot be schemed open. If you literally have to dedicate part of your scheme to getting one guy open, that is just bad in general. And the fact that he's now going to be drawing a lot of double teams as the number one, because Kelsey hasn't been doing a whole lot. Even when he's like in single coverage, he's not bringing the balls he usually does. And age is a factor. And Noah Gray has been playing decently as tight end too. So as a whole, for Kansas City, I want to veer off the larger topic here. They're winning, but Mahomes himself said it's not sustainable. And I've said many times, there's a difference between a convincing win and an ugly win. These are wins, it's not like you've heard this before, that raise more questions than they answer. These are ugly games that are being decided by ticky-tack calls and injured opponents, you know, especially like with the Chargers there. So Kansas City, if they, you know, they dream of the three-peat. And let's face it, if you do not have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, you are 0-4. Patrick Mahomes right now, and I don't care if you could say, oh, but with Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo. Yeah, I don't care. The eye test doesn't lie. Patrick Mahomes is the only thing standing between Kansas City, right as it sits right now, and them standing between Kansas City and competing for a top 10 pick. Because everybody else outside of Mahomes has been playing terribly.
I think you wrapped the bow on that pretty nicely, because it's true. If they don't have Mahomes, they're 0-4. Every single game that they've played in, they've been on the doorstep of losing every single game. Just right on the doorstep. The Ravens, it took a toe for them to win. The Bengals, it took a ticky-tacky PI call for them to win. The Falcons, it took a no call in the end zone for them to win. The Chargers, it took them to not have Justin Herbert and Joe Alt on the other side of the football and Derwin James on the other side of the football to win the game. And they're going to be in for quite the show next week against the Saints. I don't really see the Chiefs really getting a whole lot done these next couple weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if they lose to the Raiders in 3 weeks or later in October. It's looking dim. It is looking very dim right now for Kansas City. But, you know, when you have Patrick Mahomes at the end of the day, sometimes it's all you need. Sometimes it's all you need. And you mentioned Noah Gray. Let's start betting the over on his reception and yards at this point, because he's going to get targeted a hell of a lot more. But we're going to move on when we come back. We're going to look at the dire situation that is the Eagles as they move to 2-2. So Nick Sirianni's job still somehow intact kind of through going into the bye week. You're listening to the Full Maruski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Chris Kostich, CJ Medeiros, Adam Wright. This is the Full Maruski podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. The Eagles fall to 2-2 as they lose to the Bucs 33-16, and they just had no chance in this game. They kind of just fell asleep coming off the bus going to Tampa. I mean, Baker Mayfield had himself a game. It was 24-0 before Philly finally got on the board, and Baker had went 30 for 47, two touchdowns. Mike Evans, 8 catches, 94 yards and a touchdown. This was, I mean, we talk about how bad the defense was. They showed up last week. They showed up last week, but that was last week. And then you got bums like Darius Slay that go on Twitter and post up his accolades as, you know, you hate on me, but just remember I did this, this, and this, and this, and shut the fuck up. Like, I don't care. You suck right now. You suck. Explain to me why you're 2-2. Explain to me why you're 2-2. And look, let's be real. This Eagles offense just sucks. And it hasn't helped that A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith have been hurt. A.J. Brown has been hurt since week 2. Devonta Smith is going to be out a little bit longer because of the concussion. And, I mean, you have that, but you also have Saquon Barkley only getting 12 touches for some reason. You're basically literally your best player on the team, and he's only getting 12 touches. Lane Johnson's also hurt. I mean, Philly's dealing with injuries, but man, it's bad to watch him right now.
I just don't get it. The personnel that this team has overall, a better team than they had last year. Last year, their top running back was DeAndre Swift. This year, it's Saquon Barkley, and Saquon actually looks like his vintage self. And somehow you're 2-2. Somehow you are having a worse start to the season than you did last year at this time. Which makes no sense. I mean, they have good personnel on their defense. They have good players as far as pass catchers go, and they improve their running game. But somehow this team still looks painfully mediocre for a team that on paper should be a Super Bowl contender. Somehow the stench of Matt Patricia is still lingering on that Eagles sideline, because their defense is brutally bad when it matters most. It really does. And I don't see it. Really, I don't see a scenario where this improves. I mean, things look so off that it feels like it's just not going to get better unless some heads roll.
CJ, you muted.
There you go.
Oh, you'll be forgiven. However, I'll be forgiven.
You're the one that was muted.
I disagree. Anyway,
all right.
The thing with Philly is I figured out what their problem is. It's literally coaching. And I know Jalen Hurts has like the most turnovers in the NFL since like whatever that date was, since like last year or whatever. And I get that. I do. Be it fumbles or be it picks, it's getting ridiculous. But still, you'd think coaching would try to hammer that out of them, but it is becoming blatantly obvious that they don't really have any desire to do such a thing. And when it comes to coaching, I know I said this last year, but oh my God. Just, this is going to sound crazy, but hear me out. I think we, the fans, are underestimating how much their old set of coordinators, Jonathan Gannon and Shane Steichen, meant to this team. Because, you know, Adam mentioned that, you know, the defense is still terrible. And it is. Just look at what Baker Mayfield did to them. Like, Baker Mayfield's numbers from that game were insane. 30 for 47, 347 yards and 2 touchdowns. On top of that, he had 4 scrambles and a touchdown on top of it. Philly got cooked. And I know what the fans are saying, but we didn't have A.J. Brown. We didn't have Devonta Smith. My response to that is simple. Well, goddamn, I didn't realize that A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith played defense. because surely they would have prevented Tampa Bay scoring 33 points. Weird, just weird. And like I said, it's 2 years ago, but they still haven't. I just don't think they've recovered from losing both of their coordinators. Because, I mean, I know the head coach gets a lot of flack in, across the league, but people underestimate how important coordinators are. And they still haven't recovered. They still haven't found the answers yet. And it doesn't look like they're gonna. Because Sirianni, when he's forced to take the reins and he's forced to be the guy and he doesn't have two very good coordinators he can fall back on, he's getting exposed. And I think he's officially on borrowed time. You're 2-2. And even though they're 2-2, who do they beat? Who do they beat? You beat the Packers in Brazil, you know, week one. That's good. And like I said, that's still like a weird game because it was close, one score.
Still a good game. Still a good win.
Good game. Good win. Good game. That one's good. Look at the Saints, though.
Yeah, I was getting there. And you hit the nail on the head. Look at the Saints. That was ugly. You lost to the Falcons in a one-score game, and you just lost to Tampa Bay in embarrassing fashion. So, yeah, you may have had a good win against the Packers, even though your defense got gashed. You did give up 29 points. But that loss to the Falcons was brutal, where you choked. You barely beat the Saints, and Tampa just handed you your ass. Well, guess what, Philly? I have some good news for you. You can slap a Band-Aid on this problem, because next you're hosting the Cleveland Browns, led by the very mediocre groper Cleveland himself, Deshaun Watson. And if you lose that game and Sirianni's got to go, no ifs, ands, or buts, then you're going to the Giants, who you saw they played the past 2 weeks. Not great, but they're looking watchable at bare minimum. And then you're got to go to Cincy, which, yeah, that ain't going to be good. Then you're hosting Jacksonville. So in the next four games, you have a soft schedule. And if you drop even one of those games, I got to look at you a little funny.
Yeah, I mean, the only good thing for the Eagles here is that they're in the bye week, so they can kind of regroup themselves. And look, there is a little bit of merit to the whole A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith being out thing. Obviously not on the defensive side, because you're not going to win any games when you put up 33 points. You're not going to win 90% of the games that you play when you give up 33 points. But, I mean, it doesn't help when your top targets, minus Dallas Goedert and Saquon, obviously, it doesn't help that your receiving core is made up of Grant Calcaterra, Paris Campbell, Jahan Dotson, and John Ross, Jack Stoll, and Johnny Wilson. Got a couple of those names I've never even heard before. But this, they really got to hope that that A.J. Brown, at the very least, can come back for the Browns game. And that Browns game, they got to make that into a get-right game, because holy hell, they are in trouble. And yeah, Sirianni, they are lucky that they are 2-2, because I bet you if that Saints game went any differently, if they lose that Saints game, Sirianni's out the door this week. Sirianni's out the door this week if they lost to the Saints. And that's really the only difference maker right now. And that's really it. Any final thoughts before we move on?
I mean, we already pretty much tackled everything. The Eagles are in a really bad spot. And I believe I did have the Eagles winning the division. I might have to go back on that take from this past summer, because the Cowboys just look like the better team. And again, like I said with picking the Dolphins on our Friday episode, not in a good way.
Yeah.
This is a pretty bad NFC East.
Yeah. We're going to step aside for a quick break. Got through all of our game situations that we wanted to get into. When we come back, we'll get into the week four top three, bottom three. Which team?
It may not have always showed it in the stat.
I didn't mean to play that right there.
Just playing it.
Which teams had a good enough performance to make it into the top three? Which teams sucked enough to make it into the bottom three? You're listening to the Fulmaruski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You're listening to the Fulmaruski podcast, powered by Power 88 Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. Chris Gossage, CJ Medeiros, Adam Wright. As it's time for our week four top three, bottom three for this one. Got some good ones on both sides. And, you know, there's some good honorable mentions, but this week was felt like a real clear cut teams for both the top three and bottom three that you really just could not leave off. And the top three right off the bat, we're going to go with the Ravens. And this, you could honestly stretch this top three, this Ravens team for week three and week four at this point. And I'm pretty sure we had the Ravens as part of our top three for last week as well. But, you know, you're coming off of a big win against Dallas, and now you got to go up against a very, very hot Buffalo Bills team. And you absolutely embarrass them at home. Flock blackout. Justin Tucker, opening kickoff, banged it off the crossbar. Ravens in their all blacks. It was over after that. Derrick Henry, 87-yard touchdown on the first play. Game, set, match. It was over from the opening kickoff. Oddly enough, you guys can believe me or not, when I was watching the game with my dad, and right when Justin Tucker hit the crossbar, I was like, yeah, they won the game. Thoughts on this one from you fellas?
Yeah, I picked the Ravens to win, so I'm not that I know it was a lopsided game, but I'm not that surprised by the outcome. The Bills had such a good start to the year that we forgot how short-staffed they are on offense. Josh Allen is an incredible quarterback who's managed to sort of overcome some of those shortcomings on offense, and he'll probably continue to do that for the rest of the year. They're going to win the AFC East. The problem is there's only so much you can do, and this is probably going to end up being more of an ugly season for the Bills. They'll end up making the playoff. They're going to win the division. They'll probably win 10, 11 games. But I don't think they're as good as the first three games of this season really indicated. I think they're going to bounce back eventually. I think they're going to be fine. But they lost to a Ravens team that's a pretty good one despite their record early this season.
CJ.
This was bad for Buffalo. And Adam mentioned that, you know, they weren't as good as their first three games indicate. Looking back, I think you're more right than you realize. So I'm willing to take your take a step further. They beat the Cardinals by one score. The Cardinals, they walloped the fraudulent Miami Dolphins, who even when they had Tua through three picks, you know, the same Dolphins team that barely beat Jacksonville with a walk-off field goal. And then you pile drove Jacksonville on Monday night last week. Yeah. Cardinals are decent-ish, but not there yet. The Dolphins are fraudulent, and the Jaguars are currently 0-4. But guess what? The Ravens are actually contenders, or at least they should be. And when you had to play a real team, you got curb stomped. Baltimore literally made you bite the curb, as Chris said, literally from the word go. Yeah, this is bad. This is alarming. And don't look now, but next, you're at Houston. And if you drop two straight to teams that the media fancies contenders, it might be getting worse.
Yeah, 100%. And well, if you didn't already listen to, well, this first top first part of the top three was supposed to be all about the Ravens, but it ended up being all about the Bills. So Bills is also are also part of the bottom three. You might have guessed it just the way we were talking about it. But back to the Ravens, since we want to talk all about the Bills. Derrick Henry, 199 yards. I mean, this is basically deja vu for the Bills, the way that he was running all over them via the playoff game where he shoved Josh Norman into another dimension. So, good job to the Ravens. Terrible job to the Bills. There's our first teams in the top three, bottom three. CJ, you looked like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I just – this is – what we saw was the Baltimore offense, not even at full strength because, you know, Mark Andrews still hasn't done a whole lot. But once he gets going and once Zay Flowers can get his head out of his ass, it's going to be scary because when they're running the offense through Derrick Henry, they're borderline unstoppable. Derrick Henry put up a Madden – stat line more so than an actual realistic stat line, and Buffalo get better, and meanwhile Baltimore don't let them get hot is all I'm saying. And I'm sure Justin Tucker, our co-host, not the Ravens kicker, is somewhere smiling.
Yeah, and this is now back-to-back weeks for the Ravens where they're playing the style of offense that they are designed to having to be played. And Adam knows that I just took the words right out of his mouth, but it's true. This is the style of offense that the Ravens want to be playing. And once you're playing that style, there's no turning back if you're the other team.
I mean, I told you guys that the Ravens were going to be fine. They started 0-2. It happens sometimes. You lose some games. One of them was to the reigning Super Bowl champions. I mean, they're going to be fine. They're probably going to be division champions because no one else is playing very good ball in the AFC North. I'm not entertaining the Steelers, not by a long shot. The Ravens are fine. They passed the eye test. They've been playing good ball. Some of it's just goofy early season football with, oh no, they're starting 0-2. They're going to miss the playoffs. Not all the time. Some of the good teams can overcome that. And that's exactly what the Ravens are going to do.
Well, if the Ravens do make the playoffs, they'll be the second team in NFL history to make the playoffs after going 0-2. Or am I thinking of
0-3? Are you sure about that?
I'm thinking of 0-3. I'm thinking of 0-3. That's
0-4.
Thankfully, they didn't go
0-4. One team has ever made the playoffs after starting 0-4.
Texans?
No, it was back in the 90s. I'm forgetting about the team. I had the stat up
because
a week ago.
There's one team that after starting 0-3, it was the Texans from a couple years ago, from 2018, I'm pretty sure it was.
That happens a little more often. It's like 6% of all teams that have gone 0-3 have made the playoffs. But that's because I mean, that's also kind of a misleading stat, a lot of it, because all the bad teams start 0-3. But some of it could just be a really good team that just had a tough start and then figured things out. So it's a misleading stat, but it's a good thing to monitor early in the year, kind of to figure out who are the fake teams and who are the real ones.
Yeah. Next team on our list. Actually, you know what? Next two teams for top three, bottom three for the top. And really this is only because they faced each other. Top three or second team on the top three is the Washington Commanders. And the second team on the bottom three is the Arizona Cardinals. Commanders beating the Cardinals 42-14. And this is now back-to-back games for Washington where they get a huge Jaden Daniels performance. Granted, all had an interception in this game, but right now Jaden Daniels is performing the best out of the first round rookie quarterbacks that from this past year's draft right now. It's the only one that has above a 70% completion percentage right now. The only one that, or I can't say the only one anymore, but at one point was the only one with a passing touchdown or just a touchdown in general. Going to the backfield, Brian Robinson is going off right now. Terry McLaurin is getting some great looks. He actually has a freaking quarterback now. This is great. And on the Cardinals side, the only good, Kyler Murray isn't even playing terribly. They gave up 4 sacks on the offensive side, but James Conner has been probably the only bright spot, and they're still trying to figure out how to get the ball to Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, and this is going to be a fun thing to cover, at least to follow throughout the year, is this offensive rookie of the year race between Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers. I think these two are the front runners to win the award, and it's going to get interesting because, yes, Malik Nabers may be having the more impressive season between the two, but it's also more common that you see a wide receiver having this kind of year. You don't see it often from a rookie quarterback. So I think Jaden Daniels is my favorite to win the award for offensive rookie of the year. Who knows if this Commanders team is going to make the playoffs? If they do, then it means Jaden Daniels is right in the middle of it. But so far, they're playing very good ball. They've scored a combined 80 points in the last 2 weeks. That is an incredible amount of scoring, and it's not by accident. I mean, they have good targets. Terry McLaurin's a good wide receiver. Their offensive line has gotten much better than it did last year. I think this is a pretty good team. They'll go as far as not only how far Jaden Daniels will take them, but also their defense. Their defense isn't that good, but their offense looks good. Looks very good.
Yeah. CJ, before you go, I mean, you mentioned the amount of points that Washington has put up, but during that span as well, they've only punted one time in the last two games now. Only once. And you remember from that Cincy Monday night game, no punts, no turnovers from either side. Obviously, this week was a little bit different. There were some punts, but Washington only punting once and only one turnover along with that in the last two games is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, Jaden Daniels has transformed this Commanders team into obviously not a Super Bowl contender perhaps yet, but he's made them watchable. He's made them presentable. He's taking people like Olamide Zaccheaus and Noah Brown and the old Zach Ertz and making them at least Zaccheaus has been good. But he's actually making them threats. The defense actually really clutched up against the Cardinals. I mean, Bobby Wagner was able to somehow turn back the clock. You have Jonathan Allen, Dorrance Armstrong with 1.5 sacks. And as for the Cards, they have the pieces, right? Kyler Murray's been good. James Conner went over a buck on the day. Marvin Harrison Jr. had 5 catches and a touchdown. So, I don't know. The Cardinals have the pieces. They need to put it together more. And the Commanders are actually leading the division. So, yeah, Cardinals, I mean, like I said, you have the pieces, but until you put it together, we're slapping you in the bottom three. And as for the Commanders, this is a well-earned top three appearance.
100%. I mean, yeah, and Dan Quinn being the head coach of the Commanders, he's been doing a fantastic job so far. This was, as mentioned, a well-put-together win. Dan Quinn and Jaden Daniels headed in the right direction. It's all you need, really. And one more thing about the Commanders. We spent a good amount of time, but the way that the Commanders are using Jaden Daniels, too, is a big helping point, because the way that they're running this offense is more college style. They're spreading everyone out, thinning out the defense, and making it so that's easier for Jaden Daniels to apply pressure on the defense and attack the interior part or the middle of the field a little bit more effectively. So far, so good. Final team on the top three, the Lions. We touched on this a lot. The 42 points on the Seahawks, winning big on Monday Night Football, having their own little blackout and getting a big win. Those Lions black unis are awesome.
Pretty nice.
They're pretty nice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we touched on it a good amount during our game recap from our Monday Night Football game recap. Unless you guys had anything else you wanted to add.
I mean, we kind of touched on it pretty much. Like, this Lions team is I wouldn't say they've had a shaky start to the season, but they haven't really had that one performance where it's like they put the league on notice and it's like this is the Lions. This is the team that went to the conference championship last year, and they deserve to be Super Bowl favorites. This was kind of that kind of performance for them. And it was against a team that is a Seahawks team that's 3-0. They've been competitive the last couple of years. Good for them. This was all around a good win for the Lions.
Yeah. Final team on our bottom three, the New York Jets. Dude, like, Robert Saleh just isn't a good coach. He's just not a good coach. He's a terrible coach. And I said this last year when he was bitching about having to deal with Zach Wilson. And at this point, I just don't think Saleh's a good coach. He's a terrible coach. I mean, you allow your team to lose when Bo Nix had negative passing yards in the third quarter. Bo Nix, 12 for 25, 60 passing yards and a touchdown. I just don't understand how you can lose with that going on. I just don't understand it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's coaching, I tell you. I mean, sub 50% completion percentage, didn't even crack triple digits in passing yards, and you lost. And it's not like the Broncos' defense are a bunch of world beaters. What's going on with Aaron Rodgers? Or unless maybe the Jets got high on their own supply too early. Yeah, I mean, they wailed on the injury-riddled Patriots that are rebuilding. They're like, oh, look at that. We put the league on notice. Oh, you did all right. The league is officially aware after this week that you are fraudulent. Aaron Rodgers, he's definitely not an MVP candidate anymore. And Robert Saleh should probably be cast off.
And yeah.
I'll try this for a bit.
Yeah. The All Sports News page on Instagram, their headline was hilarious. Broncos upset Jets despite Bo Nix's -7 first half yards. I mean, just that just blows your mind. And then you realize it was against the Jets and you realize, oh, that's right. And it's really tough to figure out what is wrong with this team. You could say coaching, but Breece Hall has been bad. He averages 3.1 yards per carry. And the kid behind him, the rookie Braylon Allen, is making a case to dig into his workload and actually make it so that they're sharing carries. Garrett Wilson does not look like the wide receiver one I thought he was. He may not be at all. And Aaron Rodgers, I don't know what to say. He looks fine, but he isn't fine. And their offensive line is kind of just, I don't know, it's fine. I don't think it's a bad one. I think it's better than it has been in recent years. I wouldn't say it's good either.
It's bad enough to allow 5 sacks this past week.
Mm-hmm. I know, but it shouldn't be that bad.
And the post-game press conference for Aaron Rodgers as well can kind of give you an idea just how much in the shitter the Jets are now. Like, you get Aaron Rodgers on the podium and gets a question about Robert Saleh saying that they should dial it back on the snap count, which as a former quarterback, I would say, shut the fuck up. Don't dial it back on the snap count. Rodgers has made a living via his cadence. And I think Aaron Rodgers said it perfectly. How about you put some accountability on the O-linemen for acting like absolute dumbasses the entire game Sunday, the entire game. Like, and honestly, if you wanted to put an extra spot for the bottom three, put in New York fans. New York fans saw 2 football games at MetLife Stadium and saw 0 touchdowns from either Jets or Giants. Terrible.
I mean, football in New York has been bad for years, but this is just reaching a new low.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, because they unironically thought they were supposed to be good. And, well, looks like they spoke a little prematurely.
Which yep. They were supposed to be. You have Garrett Wilson. You have Mike Williams. You have Breece Hall. You've added and added and added to that offensive line this year. You brought in Aaron Rodgers, who looks fine after the Achilles tear. And what the hell is going on? How do you score 9 points? 9 points against the Broncos.
Oh, terrible.
I want to put a bag over my head after picking this team to be a contending team.
Yeah. CJ and I never faltered on these Jets. It's the same Jets that I've known for the last 23 years.
Amen.
About to be 24. That'll do it for the Fumble Risky top three, bottom three. And that's all our scheduled content. Obviously some other news around the league. Devontae Adams potentially going to be in trade options. Some little storylines involving that, along with Antonio Pierce liking a post from Sports Illustrated about it, then unliking it. Christian McCaffrey, double Achilles tendonitis season. Might as well put that in question. And Will Levis, during last night's game, had a potential AC joint injury. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes for Tennessee. And Amari Cooper, potentially a trade target for this year as well. Honestly, in all honesty, I think Amari Cooper is extremely overrated.
Get rid of Will Levis. He's such a douchebag. And he doesn't know how to play football. But what were you going to say about Amari?
He's not a douchebag. He just plays like a douchebag. Stop saying that.
And he is a douchebag. He just is.
Chris, the man eats mayonnaise by itself and puts it in his coffee. I'm pretty sure that's douchebag territory.
And he posted it on the internet. That means he's proud of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. At least he's not embarrassed by it.
Chris, you want to know what's actually embarrassing? You know he has like a weird phobia of milk, right? Meaning that...
I didn't know that one.
Oh, no, he does. But meaning, if I'm on defense and I don't know, I dip my gloves in milk, this man's going to have a heart attack.
I can see you can look this up. Left.
Will Levis is like genuinely like scared of milk. It's not even funny.
I want to ask one more question before we end the show. CJ's little tagline here kind of got me thinking that we could spend 2 minutes on this. CJ, which coach do you think is going to get fired first?
Geez, if it keeps up, probably Doug Peterson.
Yeah. What's our timeline here? What's our timeline of Doug Peterson getting fired? Because I can see him getting fired by halfway through the season.
Yeah, anywhere from like week 6 through week 9. I mean, we've said it before. He's on borrowed time.
Definitely after the London trip. Definitely after the London trip. Where
if they drop one game in London, he's getting thrown from Duval County, and that's on God.
I don't think they could probably drop the game against the – I think if they drop the game against the Bears and win against the Patriots, they're going to win against the Patriots. Just based off of, never mind the Patriots being the Patriots, but based off of last year, Jags were in London 2 weeks in a row. They won the first game, obviously, and then they won the second game, which was against the Bills, and that's because they were in London for 2 weeks. So
it's time to let all things die. Let the team just be as bad as can possibly be. At least we get Travis Hunter or Will Campbell out of it.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Jags.
I'm talking about the Patriots.
I do not want.
Well, I mean, they both. How about we just let both die? How about that?
I don't know. Mayo's at least in his first year and inherited an awful situation. So he gets some slack. Oh, but Doug Peterson, you don't get Jack. You don't, especially not Press Taylor either.
Yeah, and poor Jacoby Brissett is getting $13 million this year just to get the shit kicked out. That poor guy.
Also, like, other names to look out for getting cut loose. Honestly, if the Cowboys keep faltering, I could see Mike McCarthy going. We've already mentioned Nick Sirianni getting canned as well. And I feel like there's somebody else that I'm forgetting.
Well, the thing with Mike McCarthy, though, is like, yeah, he should get canned, but Jason Garrett also should have gotten canned way sooner than he actually did. So you have this change from Jerry Jones wanting just like going through head coaches like his life depends on it. And then all of a sudden, mid-2000s hit, gets rid of Bill Parcells, and he hates change. And he just hates change.
Yeah.
So... As much as we want to see Mike McCarthy go, I don't think he's going to go, which he probably should, but oh well. But that'll do it for us tonight. Thanks for listening. Of course, new episodes out Tuesdays at 7:30, Fridays at 5. So new episode coming out on Friday at 5 o'clock for our week 5 picks for this week. Be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Also have all of our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. And be sure to follow our Instagram, FumbleRooski_podcast, and the TikTok, FumbleRooskiPod, to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, from Chris Kostich, Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros, we will see you on Friday. Over and out.